you forget me?
I could no more forget you than myself.
Heathcliff.
Close your eyes. Open your mouth.
Welcome to FilmWax Radio, the independent film talk show. Every week we're visited by filmmakers, actors, journalists, programmers, and others to sit down and chat about the state of independent film. Today my guest is filmmaker Andrea Arnold. Ms. Arnold has made several feature films, including 2006's Red Road and the breakthrough 2009 hit Fish Tank, which also put its star, Michael Fassbender, on the map. Ms. Arnold returns to the screens this fall with her latest film, a faithful adaptation of the classic Bronte novel, Wuthering Heights. The film had its world premiere at the Venice Film Festival, where it won the prize for best cinematography. It was also an official selection at last year's Toronto International Film Festival and at this year's Sundance Film Festival. The film opens in New York on October 5th at the Film Forum and on October 12th at Landmark New Art Theatre, Santa Monica. Welcome to FilmWax Radio, Andrea Arnold. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
And I'm really excited today as well. If that weren't enough, Andrea Arnold, filmmaker of Red Road and Wasp the Short, right? And Fish Tank, one of my favorites, and now Wuthering Heights. But also today, co-hosting this episode is Kristen McCracken, a good friend. So I'm happy to have you on, Kristen.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So let's just dive in. Of course, what everybody wants to know, Andrea, is the idea of an adaptation, and this particular adaptation. I know you have a lot of thoughts about that. So, and you're probably getting tons and tons of questions about why Wuthering Heights, why now, and but it's let's get that out of the way because that is something I'm very curious about.
I think the short answer to that is I don't know, and it was a really stupid thing to do on some level, I think. Basically what happened is that I was writing something else, and an email came into my inbox asking would I be interested in Wuthering Heights, and I immediately sort of sat up and emailed back saying yes, I would be interested. And I think from that moment on I didn't really look back. It was almost like I was possessed. I can't really tell you why. I would like to be able to be more lucid about this, but my first thought was for Heathcliff, because I remember the book, reading the book and thinking that he has this really troubled childhood, and then he turns out to be this really dark character, and so my first thought was, oh, I want to tell his story. And it was that really kind of kept me going, I think. I joined something that was already in production or had already been developed, and there'd been directors attached and various actors attached. So I joined something that already had a momentum, and that was not an easy process. So it was quite a difficult journey, but I still hung on, and I kept hanging on. I think I hung on because I wanted to tell Heathcliff's story. But I realized, you know, a friend of mine texted me when he heard I was doing it. And he said, oh, Andrea, you never said you'd do a period piece. You never said you'd do an adaptation. And when you decide to do one, you only pick one of the most famous books of all time. Mm-hmm. And you're a silly cow. And I thought, yeah, he's right. You know, it's a kind of crazy thing to do.
Did you always have a thing for Wuthering Heights? Was it something that you always had a connection to?
Well, when I saw that people were making a film of it, I felt really jealous. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, that's something I'd love to get my hands on. I wasn't thinking I would at that point sort of, you know, they were already making a film, so I wasn't involved in that. But then when they came to me, I thought, oh, this is meant to be, you know, because I was feeling jealous that they were making it and they weren't making it with me. So when they came to me, I actually thought this was meant to be. But I read the book when I was about 18, 19, and it's one of those books you think it's going to be a traditional love story, but in actual fact, it's a very troubling, uncomfortable book.
I feel like I read that in high school too, or in high school age, and it feels like it's just too young to read that story because there's so many layers and to get as much out of it as I possibly could. So I'm looking forward to revisiting the book as well.
You do have the asset of having a teacher and someone who can sort of help to facilitate and guide you through a conversation, because it is a very dense book in the sense of the text and the subtext.
Yeah.
Like, I read it as an adult. I don't, you know, on my own. And had it was like,
did you like it? Because lots of men don't like it.
It's interesting. I have to tell you, at the beginning, I was struggling with just the text, you know, just with the language and, you know, getting into the rhythm and the pace of it. But once I did, I loved that book, and I found it so gratifying. There's such protein and nutrition for the mind in that book, and just on emotional also. I think any guy that really commits to reading it through and investing himself in it is going to like that book.
So let's talk about your movie. It's such an interesting adaptation in so many ways. It's different from other adaptations where you really chose to stay closely to the real age of the characters.
Yeah.
You chose to make Heathcliff the color of his skin. You made a departure there from a lot of the other adaptations. When you came in, were any of those choices already made, or did you make those choices?
No, I really started again when I okay. joined. I mean, it was difficult because there was already a script, and there was already some, as I said, momentum. And I sort of tried to embrace some of that, but then I realized as I went along that I just had to just start again. Mm-hmm. So basically I started again and made a lot of those choices myself, you know. Mm-hmm. So none of those choices were made before I started. I came in and started making my own choices, I guess.
And what prompted, how did you set about thinking about what those choices would be and what your movie would look like?
Well, when I read the book and I realized that a lot of the things that we remember in Wuthering Heights take place when they're really young, I thought that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of the other adaptations, but what I understand is that they always interpret them, they always have them as adults. Mm-hmm. And yet they're sort of slapping each other and sort of screaming and running off. And I thought, well, it makes them look really crazy if they're adults. But when they're children, you know, when they're teenagers, it makes sense because the hormones are flying. And I felt that was a really important thing to honor. Mm-hmm. And a truth about the book that I really loved and believed in. So I really, the keeping them as children for a long time was really important to me. And the colour of Heathcliff's skin, I guess, was something that I got from reading the book and looking at all the descriptions of him. I you know, if you look at the descriptions of him, there are very few descriptions of him, and I think Emily wasn't really committing. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's clear to me that he's not white. I think if you're really analysing the text, he might be of Asian appearance, because there's a couple of references to that make sense. Like, he's called a little Lascar, which is an Indian seaman. And there's another reference that Nelly uses that suggests Asian, and he's called Gypsy. And a lot of the Romany gypsies of that time would have originated from Asia.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that if you're really studying and really thinking about it. But then after a while, I realised that what was important was his difference. And that became what was important to me, and I felt that I wanted to make his difference, you know, a strong difference. Mm-hmm. And I think he's, you know, it's suggested in the book, and I wasn't, you know, I was trying to, you know, capture an essence of the book, not a total faithful adaptation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're allowed to take some artistic license and push some of those things.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny that you actually updated the movie by going more to an authentic version of it.
I actually started writing a contemporary version, actually. I started I was up in Yorkshire. I went up in Yorkshire when I first, before I started writing, I just wanted to go on the moors and just feel the moors. So I went up and I was walking around, and I saw this young lad walking down the street, and he was wearing a hoodie, and he was walking next to a dry stone wall. And I thought, you know, with the fields in the background, the moors in the background. And I thought, yeah, there's something in that, you know, modern Heathcliff. Mm-hmm. And I started writing, you know, Earnshaw coming across the moors in a car with a foster boy in the passenger seat, you know, headlights sweeping across the moors. Mm. And I thought, yeah, there's something there. But then as I got to know the book a bit more and I started investigating, I felt that it was wrong to do that, because I felt the book... I think a lot of the metaphors in the book and a lot of what the book talks about is about being female at that time, you know, through Emily's eyes. And that it started to feel wrong to do a contemporary version, because I didn't feel that was honouring something Emily was getting at. Mm-hmm. So I went, out of respect for her, I went back and did it as a period piece.
Your movie is sensual and so raw and just kind of, there's something really primal about it. And this carries through from the attraction between the teenagers, which is just hot, really. I mean, it's like you can just feel the tension. And then the shots of the insects and there's nature and all this earthy, dirty mud that's just, you could feel it oozing through your fingers. When did you decide that was kind of that nature would be a through line?
From the very beginning, I always, one of the words I always used when I was, talking to my crew and everything was visceral. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be able to feel everything. Mm-hmm. So from very early on, I wanted real locations, real materials. I mean, even when we, the house we found, that the hill farm was quite run down when we found it, and we had to restore it a little bit before we could working it. And we restored it using all the old techniques, using real materials. You know, there was nothing plastic or, modern used. I wanted everything to feel real. So from very early on, that was very important to me. I mean, when I first saw the first cut of it, I actually felt a bit depressed because I didn't feel like it looked as bad as it felt when we were there.
So was it just mud?
Oh, mud. And really thick mud. And the more there was more of us traipsing around that house in the mud, the worse it got. And your foot literally would sink in up to your ankle each step. Walking anywhere was effortful. Lots of falling over. We have a very funny outtake video of lots of people falling over. All done to Kate Bush's Wuthering Heights.
Nice. Were you familiar with this part of England before you started making this film?
I've always, as a kid, I grew up in the South, but... I've always been one of those kids who roamed. You used to go out sort of 8 o'clock in the morning and you didn't see me again until 8 o'clock at night. And I'd be out roaming. I grew up on an estate, but around the estate there were lots of wild places. And I used to roam around those wild places. And then as I got older, I've always had a sort of a yearning to sort of get out to wild places. It never leaves me, even though I live in London, I live in the city. I always, of all my life, from very young, wanted to get out. Mm-hmm. So in my 20s and later years, I used to go up to Yorkshire quite a lot with friends. We'd go walking. And so I did know it. I didn't know that particular area, but I do know Yorkshire and I know the moors. And the moors are not, I didn't grow up there, but I have this yearning for those kind of places all the time now and always. So
what are the people like there now?
The people, I try to incorporate as many people in the local area on the film as possible. We got people working on the film. As much, lots of people, and we became very friendly with a lot of people there, and we had made some good friends, actually, who people I'm still in touch with now. We partied as hard on a Friday night as we worked hard in the week, and that included all the local people as well, often.
Pub life.
So they were receptive to you?
Oh, they were fantastic. Yeah. The people in the place that we stayed in, a place called Hawes, they were fantastic.
I mean, is social life still centered around pubs up in that
area?
Oh,
yeah. There's a pub that we went
families,
to.
Families, right? All go there and everything.
Yeah.
Right? So
there was a couple of pubs in that village, and we had one particular local that we went to a lot.
Did you now?
Yes.
No, that will not be on the bonus extras, unfortunately, because nobody could...
We had our wrap party there as well, which
nice.
Went on till the early hours.
Kristen McCracken and I are speaking with filmmaker Andrea Arnold, whose brand new film, Wuthering Heights, will be opening in New York on October 5th and in LA on October 12th. Regarding this adaptation, what I'm learning from it and having thought about it is in prior adaptations, it seems like the story is what's central. It's almost as though you were investigating what is Emily Brontë, what is she getting at in this story? But it was almost as though you were searching for her in the meaning of this to eke out.
I did. I started to feel really... really connected to her somehow as I went along on the journey, and I didn't start off thinking that way. I didn't know much about her, and I'm not one of those people who know who's an expert on the Brontës. I think everyone thinks everyone in England is an expert on the Brontës, but I'm definitely not, and I'm not read Jane Eyre, and I didn't know much about them. So for me it was a whole new experience, really. I'm not been somebody I think who's been that involved in the classics. I started thinking about Heathcliff, and then as I went along and I started reading the book more and thinking about it more, I started to really feel connected to her. And I started to think about what it was like to be female at that time, when she was writing. And I think there's so much in the book that is very interesting about what it was like to be female at that time. And I think, I don't know whether conscious or unconscious that she was doing that. I don't know. You know, if you were a woman and you got to puberty, you were basically married off almost like in an arranged marriage at that time. And you were not supposed to have a voice or say, you know, have an opinion. And then you look at Wuthering Heights and what an amazing thing for her to write at that time when you're not supposed to have a voice.
Think of me all this time.
Give me hope in silence. It's easier, it's kinder. Tell me not of heartbreak. It plagues my soul, it plagues my soul.
You've treated me so badly, Kathy.
But I came and I was nothing.
You broke my heart.
Time will give us nothing.
Killed me.
I'll never leave you. Ever again.
So I started thinking about her a lot, and I read that she didn't mean for anyone to read it, that it was a stream of consciousness thing. And so I wonder if that's what makes it so intriguing, because she really lets rip with some of her feelings. And there are loads of allusions to things like, you know, wings and birds and feathers and wings being ripped off and lots of things that you could interpret in sort of interesting ways. And that all those things started being really interesting to me. And I did start wondering whether Heathcliff is a strange character. He's quite androgynous, really. Even though he's like one of those romantic heroes that women all fall in love with, he's weirdly feminine on some level. And I think really Heathcliff is Emily, you know, and I think her difference at being female is partly, you know, that's Heathcliff's difference is partly her difference. Hmm. So I started thinking all these, and I thought now if I did the film, I might even cast Heathcliff as a woman and think about it from that point of view. Because wow. I think really Emily is Heathcliff. He's her dark kind of side, you know, he's her id. And Edgar's her super ego and Kathy's her ego.
So the answer is yes, you did think about that.
quite a lot.
And all those shots.
But all this is only going on, of course, in my own head. And, you know, everyone who reads the book has their own kind of ideas. And it's got so much to interpret.
Yeah, let them make their own movies.
Absolutely.
And all those beautiful nature shots are kind of an homage to her, which is nice to think about when you're thinking back on the movie.
Yeah, I mean, she loved the moors and she loved... I mean, I actually felt sad that we couldn't shoot in the area around Haworth, because that's where she lived. And Haworth has these moors that are like, you know, like when you're, I don't know if you've been in the middle of the ocean on a boat and you see the undulating water, it's kind of, you know, you can feel the sort of power of it underneath. It's like that. Whereas where we ended up shooting was a bit more dramatic. Whereas I love that. The moors around Haworth have got this undulating sort of, like you're in the middle of the ocean, and that there's nothing beyond, you know, it's just the moors. And I think that's what she loved. And we couldn't, I mean, round there was very much part of the Industrial Revolution, so it's very built up, and we couldn't find very many real places that were very remote. So
was this house, it was just an abandoned kind of...
Yeah, it was a hill farm, and actually there was a lady living there as a sheep farmer until very recently. She had no electricity or running water. I don't know how long it had been vacant. Weirdly, whenever we found these very isolated hill farms that we were looking at, we didn't find many. There aren't very many places like that. But every single time we found somewhere, there'd been a lady living there on her own in the middle of nowhere, three or four times, with all their furniture still there and diaries and strange things in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. That Wi-Fi, I guess you need a diary. We should mention, because Kristen, you alluded to the filming and this shot and the photography, and Robbie Ryan was your cinematographer, and also sound is incredible. I mean, editing, Nicholas...
Chauderge. French. Yeah.
So it's Nicholas...
I've worked with Nicholas and Robbie...
On Fish Tank?
Yeah. For Robbie, I've worked on four films, and Nicholas, five. So they're you know, long-term comrades.
That's great. You have an unspoken...
We do. Actually, we do. I mean, we know each other really well, you know, all of us now. And so there is there's a certain philosophy that we have. You know, there's... Right. Robbie, for example, knows things I really don't like and things I really do like. Yeah. And he knows all those things.
There's a shorthand is a better way.
There's a shorthand, yeah. And but obviously every film's different. And you look at how to, you know, we look at each film and think, well, how are we going to make it look, what do we want to feel like. And so we do tests and we test various film stock.
So Nicholas Becker is your sound designer and Helen Scott, yeah, your production designer. Great.
Yeah. Beautiful. Nicholas Becker's is a poet. They all are, actually.
That's a lovely way of putting it.
So you have an established knack for discovering new talent. Can you talk about finding your young Kathy and Heathcliff here? She's remarkable. She's just, well, yeah. both of them, really.
Yeah.
Both her little freckled face.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because I was using, you know, wanted them to be 13, you're often going to have to look for new people. I mean, there's not going to be many established actors at that age. So you are going to have to look at schools and things. So we looked up in sort of the local area in Yorkshire and Sheffield. I think Kathy... In fact, both Solomon and Shannon, who play little Heathcliff and Kathy, they come from Sheffield. Mm-hmm. So we'd look at the schools and, you know, do sort of open, you know, castings on Saturdays, and people could just turn up. And I have a fantastic person I work with called Lucy Pardee, who's a fantastic casting. She's brilliant with all the kids. And so yeah, Kathy, little Shannon's, I think, was quite close to the sort of spirit of Kathy, really, mm-hmm, kind of quite wild and independent.
Shannon Beer,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And Solomon was somebody who was much quieter. In a way, they were both quite close to what they were playing. Mm-hmm. And Solomon is a man, you know, he's a boy of few words, but he speaks volumes in his look. Mm-hmm. He didn't have so much to say as Shannon.
She's a feisty little thing.
She's a feisty little thing. She's great, though. They're both great. They've both got a lot of character.
Do you think they have ambitions past this movie?
I know Shannon's been... I've done something for the... I'm not quite sure exactly what it is, but okay. I know she just did something.
Great.
So I think so. Yeah, I think they... I mean, it's always a bit of a shock quite how hard work it is making a film. I think everyone has this idea that it's a glamorous life, but of course when you're...
It's a little different than being on movie sets in Hollywood. It's being out on the moors.
Well, it's cold and, you know, they've... Yeah.
How old are they, or were they?
I think they were both 13 at the time.
Okay.
They're a bit older now.
As a director, how do you work with actors? Is there a rehearsal period, especially when you're starting with these non-actors? Is there a rehearsal period? Is there room for improv when you start to shoot, or is it all kind of plotted out beforehand?
I always have a fantasy about improvising more than I do. I always want to be able to do that, but in the end, I never have the time. Mm-hmm. I'd love to be able to just, oh, what should we do now? Let's try it this way. And I never end up having the time. Mm-hmm. But I'm not a big fan of rehearsing. I don't really like to. I like to just be actually in the situation and then try and make it work then. Mm. We went out for a day. We went around in a minibus, went around the Yorkshire moors and had egg and chips. Mm-hmm. And that was about it, really.
So you just...
Yeah, getting to know each other, really.
So then you just started shooting them and had them go.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first day, I remember, because a lot of the people in The Heights, I wanted to cast non-actors for The Heights to give it a raw feeling, mm-hmm, and then actors for The Grange. So, and we started off filming at The Heights, and I remember the first day, I had in a room about four or five people who, you know, we pretty much found on the street in Leeds, who we then bring out to the moors, who've not really been out there before, put them in weird period costumes and then ask them to act. I remember them all looking at me. I remember looking at them thinking, oh no, what do we do now? And they're all standing there in their period costumes, sort of looking at me thinking, well, what are we supposed to do then? And I'm thinking, oh blimey, I've really set myself a challenge here. Because they were all in the room together and it was a scene that involved them all. And they were all literally staring at me, terrified, wearing period costume, thinking, what on earth am I doing here?
So what do you do?
I don't really know. I thought, oh my God. I speak to them individually and I try and get them to do what I want them to do. And, you know, it's a bit sticky at first, mm-hmm, to be honest, because they've never done it before. Mm-hmm. And I think they feel a bit weird in these costumes, and it was a bit odd.
How long was your shoot? Did you do was it over different seasons? Because it's, I mean, there's different seasons in the...
Yeah, no, not really. Film, I mean, not really.
There was snow that just happened.
We happened to get that on one day. We were lucky. Okay. So actually, that was on a day where Robbie had threatened, my DOP had threatened to have a mud fight with me because it was the last day at The Heights. And then it snowed, and I was really dreading it because I knew he would win. Mm-hmm. And the mud had lots of sheep poo in it, which I didn't fancy. And I knew I was going to get my face in the mud that day, but it then snowed and iced over, so he couldn't do it because it would have been too dangerous. So actually, that snow saved me from my face being down in the mud.
Excellent. So let's refresh everyone's memory again. The movie's called Wuthering Heights, is it?
Yes.
And the filmmaker...
Mary Poppins?
That's the next remake.
Yeah. Now there's an idea.
Now I'm thinking who would play Mary Poppins. Julie Andrews. I'm sorry, we have to cast her again. And Andrea Arnold is the filmmaker.
What's next for you? This is a couple years old now, right? Or a year old?
Yes, yeah. A year since it showed in Venice. I'm writing something now, but I always feel weird talking about it when I'm in the middle of it.
So you're working on something.
Yeah.
Got stuff in the pipeline, as they say.
Contemporary. No adaptation.
And Michael Fassbender.
Not a bustle
Michael
inside.
Fassbender will be in it. So, yeah. So it opens October 5th in New York and on the 12th in Los Angeles and hopefully many other cities and towns near you. Thank you very much, Andrea.
Thank you.
For coming on. And Kristen, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And you'll come back, I hope.
Sure.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you.